Today is October 7th, and it's Friday morning, Erev Yom Kippur, at Sheret Israel. We're learning Mishnah, and in this class, we're finishing up Masechet Sukkah after over a year of study. So everyone has the sheets, I hope. Eti, do you have a sheet?
Well, which one is that?
Give this to Eti, please.
No.
And everyone, of course, should also have the Mishnah.
I didn't see it.
And as you can see, today's subject is the water libation, Nisuch HaMayim, and Simchat Beit HaShoeva.
So we have a seal before you.
So as we begin, I'll just ask perhaps Ilana to get from the shelf the Chumashim, right? And we'll begin reading the first Mishnah of the fourth chapter. We're in the first Mishnah of the fourth chapter. So if you're looking on the photostated sheets of the Mishnah, this is the first page. First page, no, it's the
334.
The second page, 334, the back of the first page.
Yeah.
And we're reading there, not the whole Mishnah. We're just reading the second half of the Mishnah, beginning from the word Hallel, which is the fifth word. The fifth word, thank you very much. The fifth word of the first Mishnah. And it says there,
line two,
a Hallel v'hasimcha shmona.
What page are you reading?
Page 334 at the very, very bottom. Ha-Halel v'simcha shmona, which means the saying of Halel and the simcha, the rejoicing, is eight days. Sukkah v'nisuch hamayim shiva. The mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah and the nisuch hamayim, the water libation, is shiva. Is not 8 days, it's only seven. V'hachalil, and the flute playing, which is a way of referring to the festivities of music, was hamisha v'shisha, was five or six. Now if you remember, going back to this Mishnah, when we saw it earlier, months ago, this Mishnah is a table of contents for chapter 4 and the first half of chapter 5. And all the subjects dealt with in this Mishnah telegraphically, just saying 5, 6, 7, 8, every Mishnah will then go on and explain why these particular mitzvot are the amount of days that this table of contents says there. So just to summarize again, the saying of Hallel and the rejoicing are 8 days. And let's think about that. We know that Sukkot is only 7 days. So how could the rejoicing, the saying of Hallel, be 8? The answer is?
It's the extra day, the day of rejoicing at the end.
Shmini Atzeret, right?
Yeah.
Right? And we know Shmini Atzeret is part of Sukkot and not part of Sukkot.
Now, Hoshana Rabbah and Shmini Atzeret are the same day?
No, Hoshana Rabbah is the last day of Sukkot. That's the seventh day.
Okay.
That's the day there's lots of Hoshanot. We did that in our last class.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Shmini Atzeret is part of and not part of the holiday of Sukkot. It has different sacrifices. It has, for those of you who heard me talk about this once, Shmini Atzeret has the same sacrifices as Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Uh-huh.
It's really a continuation of the high holidays, Shmini Atzeret. Whereas Sukkot has different sacrifices. Sukkot really, as we've talked about in the past in different frameworks, Sukkot has both the sacrifices of Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah and the sacrifices of Pesach and Shavuot. Because Sukkot is double holiday. It's the third of the pilgrimage festivals, and it's also a continuation of the high holidays, where Shmini Atzeret is not one of the pilgrimage festivals. It's only the last day of Rosh Hashanah. Such that Rosh Hashanah is really a season and not a day. But that's a whole different can of kosher worms. We're not studying that today.
So, what about that nice little legend about Solomon is running the celebration of Sukkot and decides it's so wonderful he wants the people to stay the extra day.
Stay the extra day. Right.
So Shmini Atzeret and Simchat Beit HaShoeva is the same day?
That's today's class. We're going to talk about that right now.
And that is on the 15th of Tishrei or what?
The 15th of Tishrei is the first day of Sukkot.
So it's
I count 7 days, you get to Hoshana Rabbah. The 8th day is 20. Shmini Atzeret. What does Shmini Atzeret mean? The 8th day.
Yeah. The
last day. So really the high holidays take 25 days.
That's correct, right? Shmini Atzeret is the last of the high holidays. That's why, by the way, now don't get me started on a different class, but that's why the custom is on Shmini Atzeret, the tunes are the tunes of Rosh Hashanah, at least in Musaf.
Yeah.
And of course, the cantor, the leader, wears the kittel for Musaf of Shmini Atzeret to remind us that this is the last day of Rosh Hashanah. That's also why we still have the honey on the table on Shmini Atzeret. It's the last day again of the season of Rosh Hashanah.
But in Israel, they celebrate together Shim HaTorah and Shmini Atzeret, correct?
Yes, but to say it the way you said it might confuse people.
Okay.
Because really, according to the Torah, there's 8 days, right? Yes. 7 days of Sukkot. The 8th day is Shmini Atzeret, and Shmini Atzeret is the day, because it's the last day of Rosh Hashanah, that we end reading the Torah and begin again, because it's the beginning of the year, beginning and the end. In America, in Galut, where you have 2 days of Shmini Atzeret because of the extra day of Yom Tov, so it's separated. And we do a separate celebration of Simchat Torah on the 2nd day of Shmini Atzeret.
Yeah, but also, if it's a Simchat Torah, it's a happy celebration, and then we also do the Yizkor, which is kind of... And Israel, they do it that way.
Right, that's a whole. That's another can of kosher worms. To make a long story short, the original custom is that Yizkor is said only once a year.
Yes.
On Yom Kippur.
Really?
Yom Kippur is the day of death. The day of the simulation of your own death and then rebirth. However, popular custom extended it. People like Yizkor so much, they extended it to the other festivals, the other pilgrimage festivals. But it's shayach, it's related only to Yom Kippur.
You know, so this is interesting. So that Sukkot by itself, the 7 days of Sukkot, we don't add a day in the Galut to Sukkot the way we do for...
No, we do.
No, but wait a second.
We do.
We end it, we add the extra day after Shmini Atzeret.
No, Mo, it's confusing. But
yes, obviously it is.
But in America, Shmini Atzeret is also doubtful Sukkot. Because in America, we say every day might be tomorrow.
Therefore,
on Shmini Atzeret, we just read here that Sukkah, of course, is only 7 days.
Yeah, right.
And not the 8th day. But in America, the 8th day is perhaps only the 7th day. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's some who are still in the Sukkah partially on Shmini Atzeret. It's very complicated. Let's not get into that. Because you're confused. Is it Shmini Atzeret? Is it still Sukkot? But let's not get into that. That's not in the Mishnah.
And Mo, there must be another interpretation for Canada.
Okay, let's start our class. Oh, this is introduction. Right? So what did we read in our Mishnah? That the Hallel is said on 8 days, because it's said on the 7 days of Sukkot, and it's also said on Shmini Atzeret, said on all the holidays, except, of course, for Shana Yom Kippur. And the Simcha is on 8 days. Now, that's interesting that it says Simcha is 8 days. Let's open up the Torah. Right? Open up the Torah. To Vayikra Leviticus
7:29. Yeah,
that's pretty good. And we're looking in chapter 23, verses 39 and 40. Verses 39 and 40 of chapter 23, the bottom of page 7:29. Ach, b'chamisha asar yom. לחודש השביעי באוספכם את תבואת הארץ תחוגו את חג אדוני שבעת ימים. Mark on the 15th day of the 7th month, when you have gathered in the yield of your land, you shall observe the festival of the Lord to last 7 days. ביום הראשון שבתון וביום השמיני שבתון. At the first day is a day of complete rest, and the 8th day is also the 8th day is Shmini Atzeret. ולקחתם לכם ביום ראשון, you should take for yourselves on the first day, Priyei Tzedar, that's the etrog, Kapot Tmarim, that's the palm branches, Vanaf Eitzavot, boughs of leafy trees, that's of course the myrtle, Varvei Nachal, and willows of the brook, Usmachtem Lifnei Adonai Eloheichem Shivat Yamim.
7 days.
Rejoice before God 7 days, but our Mishnah says 8 days is rejoicing. So we have to realize that the special rejoicing of the holiday of Sukkot is only 7 days. Why does the Mishnah say we rejoice on 8 days? Because Shmini Atzeret is a day of rejoicing, just like all the festivals, Pesach and Shavuot, are festivals of rejoicing. In other words, there's special rejoicing in Sukkot, the 7 days of Sukkot. But that doesn't mean on the 8th day there's no rejoicing. Rather, the 8th day gets rejoicing from the fact that it's one of the festivals. And all of the festivals, just like Pesach and Shavuot, have a mitzvah of rejoicing. Not 8 days. Right? Shavuot is only 1 day. But all the three pilgrimage festivals, including Shmini Atzeret, I should say the four pilgrimage festivals, Shmini Atzeret.
But there's still a conflict. Mm-hmm. Because the Torah says, Usmachtem lifnei Adonai Eloheichem shivat yamim, and the Mishnah says, Vasimcha shmona.
So that's what I said. There's special rejoicing on the 7 days of Sukkot.
It's a separate.
But that doesn't mean there's no rejoicing on Pesach. It's just a different mitzvah. Now, of course, you could counter what I'm saying and say, wait a second, I just contradicted myself. How did I say that there's rejoicing on Shmini Atzeret because it's one of the pilgrimage festivals when 5 minutes ago I said it's not. It's really one of the high holidays. Mm-hmm. You're right, I contradicted myself. But there's also a mitzvah of rejoicing on the high holidays.
Really?
Yes.
Even Yom Kippur?
Yom Kippur is actually a moed. It's a festival. They have great rejoicing. You know, the last Mishnah in Masechet Tanit says there weren't days of greater rejoicing for the Jewish people than the 15th of Av and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a day of great rejoicing. It's a day of freedom from sin. It's a day of liberation. It's a day of new beginnings. But that's a, again, there's so many different subjects coming up here. Let's go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah goes on to say, as we read, that Sukkah and the water libation is 7 days. So Sukkah, that's simple, right? The 7 days of the holiday of Sukkot, the Torah says you sit in the Sukkah, not in the 8th day, Shmini Atzeret. There's no mitzvah of sitting in the Sukkah.
Right, what is the water libation?
Right, what is the water libation? This is a very, very interesting matter. In the Torah, together with the offering of all of the sacrifices every day of the year, and also on Shabbat and holidays, together with the offering of the meat on the altar, there is a wine libation. And that's explicit in the Torah, that we pour wine on the altar. Literally pour wine on the altar, and it's part of the sacrificial service. No place in the whole Torah is there any mention of pouring water on the altar. No place. But there's an ancient tradition that says that on Sukkot, the 7 days of Sukkot, in addition to the sacrifices, and in addition to the wine libation, nisuch hayayin, there's also nisuch hamayim, there's also a water libation, a pouring water on the altar. Where does it come from? We don't know. How old is it exactly? It seems to far, far, far predate the Mishnah. It's a given of the tradition. Although, as we'll talk, perhaps I'll just mention it right now, the Sadducees didn't accept the water libation because it's not written black and white in the written Torah. And they didn't accept anything but what was written black and white in the Torah.
So the wine libation is for all the pilgrimage holidays?
And also every day of the year.
Oh, all the sacrifices. There's a wine libation?
There's a wine libation, absolutely.
Oh.
But the water libation is an ancient tradition. It's not written in the Torah, in the five books of Moses, that we pour water on the altar for 7 days. We'll see later, if we get to it, that it says that, it looks like it says that the Tzdukim, the Sadducees, were against it. And as many of you might know, many of the high priests and the regular priests, the Kohanim, were actually Sadducees. And there was always a conflict that the rabbis and the people wanted to make sure that the Sadducee priests would do the water libation like he was supposed to do it, and wouldn't try to get out of it because he didn't believe in it. So what happened is, once upon a time, the priest, as he's doing the water libation, actually poured the water outside the altar and not in the altar like he was supposed to, because he wanted to look like he was doing it, all the people looking from afar, but he didn't really want to do it. So he poured the water on his feet instead of on the altar, and everyone pelted him with their etrogim.
Etrogim, now I remember that story.
And there seems to be actually a memory of that in Josephus, not just in the Mishnah. So let me read for you, if we're getting to it, Josephus. I have Josephus right here on the sheet. As to Alexander, who was one of the less than legitimate high priests, his own people were seditious against him. For at a festival which was then celebrated, when he stood upon the altar and was going to sacrifice, the nation rose up against him and pelted him with citrons. which they then had in their hands, because of the law of the Jews required that at the Feast of Tabernacles, everyone should have branches of palm tree and citron tree, which thing we have elsewhere related. They also reviled him as derived from a captive and so unworthy of his dignity and sacrificing. And this, at this he was in a rage and slew of them but 6,000. So it doesn't say here that what he did is pour the water on his feet, not on the altar. It doesn't say exactly why they pelted him at this time, not another time, but it could be it's referring to the same event that's mentioned in the Mishnah of a Sadducee who refused to fulfill the mitzvah of the water libation as understood by the rabbis and the tradition of the people. So anyway, back to, I just wanted to add, what's the meaning of this water libation? Where does it come from?
Just before the rainy season.
Right, and apparently.
It's life in Israel.
Right. Mm-hmm. A good part of Sukkot is about water. The meaning of the four species might be as a prayer for water. And indeed, at this point of the year, the cisterns are empty. The agricultural cycle has come to an end. It hasn't rained since April, since Pesach. And we're hoping and praying for the beginning of the rainy season as soon as the holiday is over. And it could very well be that the water libation is again a symbolic acting out of a hope for and a prayer for rain and for water.
Don't we have the prayer for the rain starting exactly now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually the Mishnah in Shaktet Rosh Hashanah, which I brought for you on the sheets here, says that if you look in C2, V'chag nidonim al hamayim. Hag in the language of the Mishnah means Hag Sukkot. On Sukkot we are judged for water. As Rosh Hashanah, every individual is judged, but on Sukkot, the tradition says that the judgment for water, how much water will come from heaven during the coming year, that's when the judgment takes place, and therefore that's the time we pray for rain and pray for water with words and with the actions of the love and with the pouring of the water on the altar.
So the prayer of the water happens which day of Sukkot?
In our tradition today,
Shmini Atzeret.
We say on Shmini Atzeret, right?
That's
the prayer for the rain.
That's what I was saying.
We delay the prayer for rain because we don't want it to rain on us when we're in our sukkah.
Oh.
There's a whole tension here that it's a time to pray for rain. But rain to fall would be a curse. So therefore we hint at the prayer for rain with the libation and with the lulav, but we don't actually say it until we're out of the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Okay.
So for us here in Dallas, who haven't seen rain in so long, what do we do?
Actually, the rainy season and the dry season in Dallas is pretty similar to what it is in Israel.
Yes.
So if we continue on in the Mishnah, the last three words of the Mishnah we just read had said that Hechalil Hamisha V'Shisha, the flute and all the musical festivities of what's going on during this holiday of Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret is either 5 days or 6 days. And as we can remember from when we earlier learned months ago, discrepancies or differences, is it 6 or 7, 7 or 8, 5 or 6? It's of course a matter of, will Shabbat fall on a weekday or fall on the holiday? If we don't play the flute on Shabbat or on holidays, so how many days are we going to miss? If there's 8 days altogether, the first and the last day are holidays, so the music just went down from 8 days to 6 days. But then if there's another Shabbat in the middle, it just goes from 6 to 5 now. Only 5 days. But if Shabbat is on the festival itself, on the first day or the last day, stay at 6.
Yeah.
That's what's going on with the music.
So we should have music in our synagogues.
We should have music.
But not the instruments.
No. Chalil, the flute.
Yeah, that's why we don't have the instruments. We have only singing.
No, but we should have the music.
We should have the flute.
Traditionally, every night. Well, let me not say it. Let's read it as we get to it. Okay, so now let's go to the first Mishnah we're learning after the table of contents, which is Mishnah 8 of this chapter, Mishnah Chet.
Which is somewhere.
So if you're looking on your sheets, you'll find it on page 338.
That's the bottom.
Yeah.
338 at the bottom. And what it says the following. Hachalel v'simcha shmona ketzad. Right? The saying of Hallel and the rejoicing is 8 days. How so? So it's quoting the table of contents that says these two things are 8 days. And it just adds the word ketzad. How so? How does this saying of Hallel and the rejoicing work out for 8 days? So it says, Milamed, it teaches you, Shechayav Adam behalel uvesimcha ukvod yom tov acharon shelachag kishar kol yomot hechag. Translation, it teaches you that a man is obligated in the saying of Hallel and in rejoicing and in the honor of Yom Tov, Haharon, the last day of Yom Tov, in other words, Shmini Atzeret, kishar kol yomot hechag, just like he's obligated on the other days of the holiday. And that, of course, comes as a special point in order to counterbalance what the Torah said. The Torah said 7 days of rejoicing.
Yes.
So the Mishnah emphasizing it's really eight. You might have thought it's seven, but it's really eight because, again, Shmini Atzeret has rejoicing for a different reason. The verse says 7 days rejoice in Sukkot, but there's also rejoicing in Shmini Atzeret just like any other holiday. So it's 7 days plus one more day of rejoicing. And notice the rejoicing includes Kvod Yom Tov, honoring the Yom Tov. And almost always when the Mishnah talks about honoring Yom Tov, it means food. Right? Good meals.
We didn't change much, did we?
Good meals. Okay, so make sure you have a good meal on Shmini Atzeret, just like you have on the other holidays. And then...
I was thrilled cooking.
Doesn't mean you have to cook. I mean, uncooked food is kerasa.
I like it.
Absolutely. I love salads.
And then the Mishnah says, Sukkah Shiva Ketzad. The Sukkah for 7 days. How so? And it's just like the pattern we've seen. It quotes from the table of contents, Sukkah Shiva. The Sukkah 7 days. That's what the table of contents said. And it's the word Ketzad. How so? Tell me something about sitting in the sukkah for only 7 days and not eight. So it says, Gamar milechol, finished eating. And it means when you finished eating on the seventh day of Sukkot, which we call, Ilana, what day do we call that? You just said
no,
Hoshana Rabbah. Right? The seventh day of Sukkot, you finished eating. Lo yatir sukkato. You should not take down your sukkah. On the seventh day, the last day of the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, don't take it down, even though you finished to eat. Aval morid et hakelim min hamincha ulamala. But you should take down your furniture and your kelim and your vessels. Your
So kelim is not the food utensils, but the furniture?
In general, everything. Min hamincha ulamala, from mincha time and henceforth, mincha time is 9.5 hours of the day, about 5 in the afternoon. Which we divide daylight into 12 hours, and 9.5 is towards the end of the afternoon. So at about 5 in the afternoon, you should take everything out of the sukkah, but leave the sukkah standing. Why do you do this? Reading the last 6 words, Mipenei kavod yom tov acharon shel chag. Because of the honor of the Yom Tov Acharon, of the last day, last Yom Tov of the Chag. What is happening? For the 7 days of Sukkot, I've been living in my sukkah, my couch is there, my kitchen table is there, all my finery is there, and all my gold and silver vessels are there. And now, it's 7 days are finished of the holiday. We're about to leave the sukkah and go home for the 8th day for Shmini Atzeret. But I have a tension here. I can't take my sukkah down because it still has the holiness in it. You're not allowed to touch it until the end of the holiday. But on the other hand, I have to take, if I go to my home and leave all of my finery in the sukkah, I'll be in my home without honoring the Yom Tov because I'll be sleeping on the floor instead of sleeping on my bed. I'll be using paper cups instead of using all my gold and silver that I left in the sukkah. So the solution is, leave the sukkah up, but take everything out of it and bring it home so you can celebrate the Yom Tov at home with the pomp and the circumstance and the honor and the kavod that is necessary.
So the honor is the utensils being brought back home.
Right. You can't celebrate Shmini Atzeret at home without your finery. You can't just leave it in the sukkah. So we have a tension here. Leave things in the sukkah as long as possible and don't take the sukkah down, but at the last minute, take everything out of the sukkah and bring it into your home to celebrate Shmini Atzeret. Okay?
We have a lot of things in Judaism regarding honor, the honor of the challah, the honor of the wine, mm-hmm. the honor of the holiday, mm-hmm. honor of father and mother. It's a big thing for us.
Yeah.
So when do you... with the number 8, yeah, I noticed with Hanukkah, it's 8, you know, was it intentional that there were 8 that we celebrate, you know, there were 8 nights that we celebrate? In the story, it's 8, you know, the oil burned for 8.
In truth.
Is that the reason we celebrate
in
the 8th?
In the 10th chapter of the second book of Maccabees, mm-hmm. it says that Hanukkah is celebrated as it is because that year they couldn't celebrate Sukkot because they were fighting. And therefore, there are 8 days of Hanukkah as a replacement for the 8 days of Sukkot that year wasn't celebrated.
Oh, okay.
And I know they don't teach you this in Hebrew school, but that's what it says.
They don't.
No.
Not interested.
A lot of interesting things they don't teach you in Hebrew school. Anyway.
I like that. It makes more sense.
Yes.
Back to the Mishnah. Yes. Now we're going to look at Mishnah 9. Mishnah 9. Mishnah Tet. And it follows the same pattern, which says, Nisuchamayim Ketzad. So it quotes from the table of contents, which was the first Mishnah, Nisuch HaMayim, the libation of the water, Ketzad. How does it work? What do we do there? So here you have the description. And perhaps we'll just read it in English because the Hebrew words are a little bit complicated. Let's see, what does the English say? It says, how so? A golden flagon holding 3 log was filled from the pool of Shiloah. Now, those of you who have been to Jerusalem know that there's a spring right outside to the south of the Old City, to the south of the Temple Mount, a spring called the Silwan in Arabic, in Hebrew the Shiloah. And that spring is the spring that for many thousands of years the city of Jerusalem has gotten its water from. And perhaps you even walked through the tunnel of Hezekiah. Right? Yes. Did you have anyone do that when you've been in Israel? Walk through the tunnel. The tunnel is an underground cavern that was chiseled by hand to bring the water from the spring mm-hmm. underground into the city. And you can still walk
that
through that
tunnel at the side of the wall.
That's no. Okay. So today, the tunnel does not reach to the walls of the old city.
Yeah. No, I mean to the western wall.
It is south of the western wall. That's different. This, to go to this tunnel, you have to go down to the Arab village south of the old city.
All right.
Most tourists do it, I think.
Okay.
So anyway, what happens is they would fill these big flasks of water from the Shiloah, from the spring. When they arrived at the water gate, they sounded a prolonged blast and a quavering note and a prolonged blast. In other words, what we have here is a description of some type of very, very big and pompous ceremony for the drawing of the water. And they would have a procession there with the shofar and with the trumpet. And everyone's following the priests as they draw the water from the spring. He went up the ramp and turned to his left. Notice this procession has gone actually in now to the temple. Up the ramp and turned to his left. And if you want to know what we're looking at, so why don't we look at the picture?
Did they go to the spring or to the place that the tunnel already reached the city?
No tunnel. If we're looking at the picture of the Beit HaMikdash that I have in the sheets that I gave out to you, right? you can see where the altar is. The brazen altar is over here. The brazen means a bronze, and where it says the word kebish means the ramp. That's the ramp going. The altar is about the size of this table. See this table here? Perhaps without the table that Jim is sitting at, but just these four tables. Wow. That's about the size of the altar. And people stand up there, and the altar is as high as the ceiling. Don't think of an altar, a little thing.
Yeah.
This is the altar, and it's about as high as the ceiling. You go up to there with the ramp. And the Kohanim are walking up there, and now they're walking up there with these big flasks of water. And they have been walking from the spring, it takes up a 15-minute walk, with these flasks, to the accompaniment of trumpets and music and great pomp and circumstance, and thousands of people are following. And then the people, of course, wait outside, and they watch the Kohen going up the ramp with the water to the top of the altar.
That's why you should have pants.
He went up the ramp and turned to his left, where there were two silver bowls. These two silver bowls, let's see if I can describe it. If this is the top of the altar, and we're standing up there, right, this is the table, then there are apparently rods, let's say about this thick, that are fastened into the altar. And their rods go up, and then the rod holds a pitcher. There's a pitcher standing above the altar that's embedded. There's actually two of them, and they're being held in by rods. And the way the Lord, water elevation is going to work is that the priest is going to pour the water from his big flasks into these pitchers, and the pitchers have holes in them. So then the water flows onto the altar, and everyone looking from the outside can see this happening in front of them. So let's read the description now in the Mishnah. He went up the ramp and turned to his left, where there were two silver bowls, and these are silver bowls that are embedded right there, connected to the altar with these rods. Rabbi Yehuda says they were plaster, but their surfaces were blackened because of the wine. And what happens is that these two flasks, they were attached to the altar all year round. One of them is for wine to be used every day. One is for the water to be used only during Sukkot. But it happened that even the one that's for the water, sometimes a mistake, they used for the wine during the year, and it got dirty from the wine. So both of these two looked like they're tarnished, and that's from the color of the wine. They were plaster, but their surfaces were blackened because of the wine. And they each had a hole like a narrow spout, one wide and the other narrow, so that both were emptied out together. The one to the west was for water, and that to the east was for wine. Now, the wine they had in those days was very thick. It was almost like syrup. And it would pour out of the pitcher that is connected to the altar, would pour out very slowly, because it was thick, whereas water poured out very quickly. So of these two pitchers that are connected to the altar, one has a tiny hole at the bottom, and one has a larger hole. The one with the larger hole is for the wine. The one with the smaller hole is for the water. So if you pour into both of them at the same time, one water and one wine, even though the wine is thicker, it comes out at the same rate because its hole is bigger. The idea was to pour the water and wine at the same time and for the flow to end at the same time. And again, it's calibrated because the wine is thicker, but therefore its hole is bigger. And again, the wine was poured every day of the year, but the water was poured only on Sukkot.
Okay.
If one emptied out that for the water into the one for the wine, or that for the wine into the one for the water, it was still valid. If you got it mixed up, it's okay. Rabbi Yehuda says, with one log they should carry out the libations all the 8 days. Now notice that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing against the Tanakhama on 2 points. Number one, the Tanakhama said there are 3 log of water. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says there's only 1 log. Less water by 2/3. But secondly, Rabbi Yehuda says all the 8 days. What did we say until now? How many days is the water libation?
Seven.
So there's an argument, how many days is the water libation? Is it 7 Or is it eight? And again, nothing is written in the Torah on this subject. There's no
and
mention there for water libation. No. Rabbi Yehuda is Rabbi Yehuda ben Eli. When it doesn't say who it is, it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Eli. Now, listen to this. To him who performed the libation, they used to say, raise thy hand. In other words, pour up high so everyone can see what you're doing. And again, the altar is this high, up the ceiling. Thousands of people are looking from outside, looking up to the altar, to the priest who's pouring there, pouring from his flask into the pitcher, and from the pitcher the water is flowing onto the altar. They used to say to the priest, raise thy hand, the hand that has the water pouring from it, for on one occasion he poured over his feet, and all the people pelted him with their citrons. And again, why did he do that? Because he was a stuki, he was a Sadducee, that was trying not to fulfill the mitzvah of the water libation, because they did not believe in that at all. And that is probably the story we saw in Josephus a few minutes ago.
That's a new one on me. I never knew they put any water or wine on.
Well, now you know. Actually, the altar had drainage pipes in it so that the water and the wine could flow down, and those drainage pipes went all the way down to the sewer system under Har HaBayit. In other words, when they built Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, it has a drainage system underneath it. That's the whole story of the temple tunnels that you've heard of. That's the ancient drainage system that the water would flow through.
Must be a lot of insects with all this wine coming through the drains.
There are stories of how they used to clean it out.
Really?
Yeah.
Who would clean it up?
Who?
I didn't hear what you say about cleaning.
There are stories about how they used to clean out the drainage system from the wine and the water.
Blood from the sacrifices, they also drained.
That also, yeah. There's a drainage system for the blood also.
And was the altar cleaned all the time?
Too? Yes, it was. Yeah. I didn't, not all the time. I don't remember when.
Probably the wine and the water would clean it.
That would help.
And disinfect.
But again, the wine is every day of the year. The water is only once a year.
Okay, the wine will disinfect, you know, the
everything else.
Very smart.
Yeah. Okay.
It's logical. No?
So,
the blood,
we are now going to the 10th Mishnah. Look how fast we're moving here. We're going to finish this tractate. Bruce, you won't finish.
I have a meeting. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
We're in the 10th Mishnah.
Everybody.
Can you find the 10th Mishnah? The 10th Mishnah is on page 340 in the photostat. Page 340. It's easy to use the photostats if you don't fold them back. Just put them on the table like I put them. That's the easiest way to use the photostat.
True.
Okay? So anyway, it is page 340, Mishnah 10. And it says, Kima'aseihu v'chol, kach ma'aseihu v'shabbat. As it was done on chol, so it was done on Shabbat. In other words, the water libation was done, like we read, 7 days. According to Rabbi Yehuda, even 8 days. It was done even on the festival days of the holiday, and even on Shabbat. Ela, shaya mimalei mi'erev Shabbat chavit shel zahav, shina mikudeshet min ha-shiloach. Rather, that on Erev Shabbat, on Friday, they would fill up a barrel, a golden barrel, that wasn't sanctified from the shiloach.
What does it mean?
In other words, on every day that wasn't Shabbat of the 7 or 8 days of the holiday, in the early morning hours, where they would have this big procession of going down to the Shiloach, to the spring, filling up these 3 flasks with water, and then with pomp and circumstance, walking in a great procession of thousands of people to the Temple Mount, where they would go up the ramp, the priests would go up the ramp with the water, and then as the sacrifices were being sacrificed, they would do the libations of the water and the wine. That happened on every day that wasn't Shabbat. When it was Shabbat, they wouldn't go in the morning to fill up the water, but they would have the water already from the night before, from the afternoon before, because they didn't want to go to the spring on Shabbat to fill up the water, because the spring was outside the city walls, and that would be carrying. And you can't carry on Shabbat.
And flowing water.
But
no, that's okay. You're allowed to take water.
On Shabbat, but on Shabbat.
On Shabbat, you're allowed to use flowing water. But you can't carry it.
Right. But why didn't they carry twice the amount on the Friday when they did the procession?
I don't know. It says that Friday afternoon they went and got more water.
They went quietly.
Seems like they didn't get it from there. It says that which had been... They used to fill a golden jar which had not been sanctified from the pool.
From the pool of Shiloh.
Which had not been sanctified.
Sanctified
from the pool.
Right, means that the barrel that they put the water in to keep it Shabbat night was not one of the vessels of the sanctuary. It wasn't a sanctified vessel. It was just a normal golden barrel like the one you have in your garage.
Yeah, there's lots of golden barrels in my garage.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Donate them to JSI, by the way.
Yes,
I'd like to. Okay, so what do we do with the water that's now been drawn Friday before the sun goes down, waiting for the next day? Umanicha belishka. And they left it in one of the chambers on the Temple Mount. They left the water there in a covered barrel. Nishpacha o nitgalta. If the water got spilled or got exposed, spilled, we understand. Exposed means that the cover of the barrel got displaced so that the water was exposed for the night. Then, haya mimalei minakior. Then the next morning, when they needed water, they wouldn't take it from the barrel, because from the barrel it was spilled or it was exposed, and it's about to see you can't use exposed water. What would they do? They would fill up from the sink. There was a big, big sink on Temple Mount used to wash the hands and the feet of the Kohanim before all the sacrifices. So if one day, on Shabbat morning, they found that the water that they had drawn the afternoon before for the water libation, the water wasn't usable. It got spilt, or it wasn't usable for a different reason. They'd simply take water from the sink. Big deal. No problem. Don't think of a sink as big as this room. There was a big, 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 big sink.
Like a tiny pool.
Which was also actually called a yam. It was called a sea. It's called Yam Shel Shlomo, the Sea of Solomon.
Is it in the picture?
Is the sea in the... Is the Sea of Solomon in the picture? I doubt it. I don't see here this. I don't see, and... No. I'm sorry to say it's not here.
Chamber of Leopards.
So anyway, the last line of this Mishnah, Shahayayin v'mayim ha-migulim sulim l'gevei mizbeach. For wine and water that has been exposed are disqualified for the altar. Now, water or wine that was left uncovered for the night is considered to be less respectful.
So the exposure is an issue of night, not you can have a glass of wine.
Right, if it was left for the whole night, then it can't be used because it's considered to be something that you wouldn't serve to a guest, so you can't serve it to God. Okay, very good. We finished the chapter.
Oh,
now we're finishing the next chapter. And we're going to finish the Masechet indeed. So now we are in the first Mishnah of the next chapter. And all we have to do to finish is four Mishnayot, because the fifth and the sixth and the seventh are really just an addendum that's on a completely different subject. So, what does the first mission of the chapter say? Chapter 5, it says, Hechalil Hamisha v'Shisha. The flute is 5 and 6. And we remember that is a quote from the table of contents. That the music on this holiday are either 5 or 6 days, depending when Shabbat falls on the festival itself or in the intermediate days. And it says, Zehu Hechalil Shel Beit HaShoeva. This is the flute of the house of Shoeva, the house of drawing water. Shoeva means drawing water. She'eino doche lo et Shabbat velo et Yom Tov, that it doesn't push aside neither Shabbat or Yom Tov. You can't play the flute and the musical instruments on Yom Tov or on Shabbat. That's why it was 5 or 6 days, as we explained. And then it says, Kol mi shelo ra'a simchat beit ha'shoeva, lo ra'a simcha mi'amav. Anyone who never saw the rejoicing of the house of drawing water has never seen a good party in his life. And now we're going to describe very soon the party. So it says, Motzei Yom Tov Rishon Shalachag. I went to the next Mishnah already. At the end of the first holiday of Sukkot, in other words, let's say it was on a Wednesday night to Thursday, as it is this year. So Thursday night, Yardu le'ezrat hanashim. They went down to the women's courtyard. So let's look on the chart and see where the women's courtyard is. So you see the chart, a good part of the Temple Mount, like half of it, is called the women's courtyard. And there was room here for thousands upon thousands of people. And when it says they went down, it means the priests left the inner chambers and they all came into the courtyard that's called the courtyard of the women. Umitaknim sham tikun gadol.
That's the women's hall?
The women's hall, yeah.
Oh, the outer court.
It's the outer court. And they would make there a tikun gadol. Tikun, of course, means a fixing, right? A big fixing. And it's not described here what the big fixing is, but I brought other sources, which we might not have time to look at, so I will tell you outside what they are. They would make a big fixing. What's a better word for that? They would make a remedy. What the other sources say, the Tosefta and other Mishnayot, is that at this gigantic party they used to have every single night of Sukkot, as we're about to read, the men and the women would become mixed together and there would be too much levity, and what's another word? And
Simcha. Relajo.
I don't know. Looseness, you could say, I don't know.
Goodness.
And therefore they came up with a solution to prevent the sexes from mingling, and the tikkun gadol is that they built a giant balcony on the perimeter of the outer court, a balcony. So from all the four sides, you have a platform going around the walls, and that's where the women would go. So every year, at the end of the first day of Yom Tov, they would put up this balcony. And there's a big description in the Tosefta of how actually it was built. It was taken down every year. So we won't go into all that, but
so
it's fascinating.
So who went to the women's section? The priests or
the
everybody?
Priests went down in order to put up the platform.
But otherwise, the other males went to the women's section too.
They went to the women's court, but the women were up, were in the colonnade.
And then the women were rushed into the outside.
No.
Outside, to the balcony, yeah. According to Rashi, what happened is...
The women are up in the balcony.
Yeah, according to Rashi, what happened is that they built into the walls of the courtyard these projections out, and then at the end of Yom Tov, all the priests, in a magnificent effort of cooperation, would bring these big, big plywood planks and place them on the projection so that within a few hours they were able to create this balcony. That thousands upon thousands of women would then ascend to watch the festivities that were going on in the women's courtyard down below. And now we're going to read the description of the festivities, and I guess with that we'll end the year. So let's read, let's say, in Mishnah 4. And Mishnah 4 says that ha-chasidim v'anshei ma'aseh, right, the pious and the men of great deeds, where is it exactly on your sheets?
That's right.
Everyone has it there on page 342. That the men of piety and the men of good deeds, hayu mirakdim lifnehem bavokot shel or shebiyadehem. They would dance before them, before the Kohanim and the Levim, with torches of fire in their hands. No juggling. There would be a lot of juggling going on. It reminds us of a carnival. Marriage, a carnival today. Vomrim lifnehem divrei shirot v'tishpachot. And these pious people would recite before the Kohanim words of praise and of thanksgiving. In other words, there would be poetry, and there would be singing, and there would be dancing, and there would be juggling. V'alevi'im v'chinarot uv'nevelim uv'miltzotayim v'chatzotrot uv'chli shir below mispar. And the Levites would play on their violins and on their harps and on their cymbals and with the trumpets, with all different types of instruments. And of course, we should remember that the main instrument was the flute that was discussed earlier.
So that's on the eighth day.
No. This is, we said, well, what did we say? That it's 5 or 6 days, right? 5 or 6, depending on when Shabbat falls. But it's not the eighth day. It's every single night.
Every single
night? Of Sukkot. Every single night of Sukkot.
And single night they'll build these rampants?
It was built, we said, at the end of the first 24 hours.
Okay.
Because we didn't have the rejoicing. Again, we don't have it on the festival or on Shabbat. So the first day of Sukkot, there wasn't a party. The party began at the end of the first day, which is nighttime, and then they would dance all night.
Why don't they leave these for the next year?
Leave what for next year?
The balcony.
Because they didn't want to leave the balcony permanently, because you're not allowed to alter the structure of the Beit HaMikdash. Therefore, it had to be a temporary addition and not actually part of the building.
Gotcha.
Not part of the building. Actually, let's read a extra source that I brought to tell you about Simchat Beit HaShoiva. Look at the bottom of the first page that I prepared here. The very bottom, it says, Talmud Yerushalmi Masechet Sukkah. So I am going to read it and translate. It's 4 lines of Hebrew at the bottom of the page. Halacha Bet. Amar Rav Yeshua ben Hananya. Kol yamim shel simchat beit ha-shoeva lo hayu toamim tam sheina kol ikar. For all of the days of the rejoicing of the house of drawing, right, the simchat beit ha-shoeva, we didn't taste the taste of sleep at all. And he goes on to explain how it is we didn't sleep for 5 days. B'tchila yu'olchim lakriv tamid shel shachar. At the beginning, as if you think of the first day of Sukkot, we would go to offer the morning sacrifice. From there, we would offer the musaf sacrifice. From there, we would go to the offering of the voluntary offerings. From there, we would go to eat and to drink. From there, we would go to study. From there, we would go to offer the afternoon sacrifice. From there, we would go to Simchat Beit HaShoeva. In other words, when the sun went down, as we described, right, at the end of the first day, would begin the rejoicing. And then it goes on to say, did you really not sleep for 5 days? That's forbidden. It's dangerous to your health. So you say, okay, we used to nap a little bit. But we really didn't sleep for 5 days. Because they danced all night, and in the morning, the process began again. So, just to describe it to you a little bit, outside, before we read it, so the night falls, they begin dancing and singing and juggling and everything that's going on, and when dawn, the crack of dawn comes, that's when the ceremony of drawing the water begins. So we read about that they went down to the spring with all the procession and the trumpets, and they draw the water, and then they bring it to the temple, and they do the sacrifices with the libation, and then the whole process of the next sacrifices and the prayers, and then going to eat and to drink, and then going to the afternoon sacrifices. And after the afternoon sacrifice, they begin dancing and singing again all night. Then crack of dawn, again they go to the spring, draw the water with the big procession, bring the water to the temple, do the libations, the whole thing begins again, and the claim is that they hardly slept for the whole holiday. And someone who's never been to Simchat Beit HaShoeva has never seen a good party in his life.
And here they say that whoever took a nap, they would hit him.
No, you read it wrong. He said that anyone who swears not to sleep for 5 days is violating the Torah. Therefore, you have to say at least that they napped a little bit, because you're not allowed to go 5 days without sleeping. It's just dangerous. So let's just read the rest of Mishnah 4, and then we'll go and prepare for Yom Kippur. So we had read that the Hasidim and the Anshei Ma'aseh, the men of great deeds, they used to do the dancing and the singing. Then it said the following. That the Levites... Yes, so if you look at the map, at the chart, you see a place here called Nicanor Gate, Gate Nicanor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where is that?
Look at Gate, the Nicanor Gate. And you see a 10 there? Yeah. See the 10?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
The 10 refers to the list on the back of the sheet. And you can see 10 is 15 semicircular steps. They didn't draw it in for you, but they just wrote that it belongs there. There were 15 semicircular steps going down from the hall of the Israelites to the women's hall. It's going down. There's a drop. And there are 15 circular steps leading out of that gate. And the Levites, which is the orchestra, with all these instruments, they were standing on the steps. And everyone was dancing in front of them in the courtyard.
So Shira Ma'alot will be on these steps or on the 12 steps?
And those are the same steps that during the rest of the year the Levites in their choir would stand as they were singing for the sacrifices. But at this time they weren't singing, they were playing, right? For the Simchat Beit HaShoevah, they were playing. And then what would happen? It says, Amdu Shnei Kohanim Bishar Ha'elyon. And I'm, all right. See, if you see on the map here, the Shar Ha'elyon, the upper gate is here. There are two Kohanim standing here. The Levites are on the stairs over here, and all the thousands of people are dancing and singing over here. So, Amdu Shnei Kohanim, the two Kohanim, we're standing in the Shar Elyon. She read me Ezrat Yisrael Ezrat Nashim.
No,
I'm sorry. My map is wrong. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It should be the Nicanor Gate.
Right. So really, the two Kohanim are here, and then the 15 steps going down is the orchestra. So the two Kohanim like above the orchestra. They're one or two steps above the orchestra. And of course, everyone in the courtyard can see the two Kohanim, and they can see the orchestra on the stairs. The stairs going down to the women's gate. And then what would happen? Ushtei chatzotot b'yadehem. And these two Kohanim had these very, very big, long trumpets, if you've seen in any of the movies, right? These long, long, without vowels. It's just a long, long bugle. Karah gever. When the
rooster
cocked, that's how you say it, the rooster crowed, like at 5 in the morning, they've been dancing all night, that was the sign to begin the procession to go draw the water for the next day's celebration. Taku b'riu b'takau, so they now blew on the trumpets with a long blast and a short blast. Higiu l'mala asirit, they arrived to the 10th stair. What that means is that as the two Kohanim are blowing, it's a symbol for the orchestra to start moving south into the courtyard, and for the people to move from the courtyard out the lower gate towards the spring.
Shiloh.
Towards the Shiloh. And the more the trumpets blow, the more everyone's gradually moving south. The orchestra is going down to the courtyard, and the people in the courtyard are going out the gate in the direction of the spring. Higiu la'azara, when the orchestra got to the courtyard itself, from off the stairs, taku v'iriyu v'takau, they blew more trumpet blasts. Hayu tokim bolchim, and they were blowing and blowing and blowing, ad shemagim l'shar yutzei l'mizrach, until they finally reached the gate that moves out to the, I said it's the south, I was really wrong. This is the
east.
The east, right, and then they're going to go south to the spring. They go east and south. Higiu l'shar yutzei l'mizrach, when the orchestra of the Levites got to the gate, actually leading out to the east, hafchu fenehem lema'arav, they turned around and they faced to the west, and they're walking out, but when they walked out the gate, they now face backwards towards the temple, as it were, facing the Shekhinah, and they said, avotenu shayu b'makom hazeh, our forefathers, when they used to be in this place, achoreihem el heichal Hashem ufneihem kedma, vehima mishtachavim kedma l'shamash. Our forefathers, when they used to be in this place, they would turn their backs on the temple and they would face to the east, which of course is the rising sun, and they would bow down to the sun.
So, in this map, which one is north, which one is south?
Okay, so...
This is south.
This is south. South?
Sorry.
South?
South is...
South? This is...
Okay.
West.
North?
No, okay, south.
North?
Yeah.
West?
Okay.
East.
Okay.
East towards the Mount of Olives, south towards the Shiloah, right, north towards what today is the American consulate. So anyway, at this great point, this great moment of spiritual exaltation, they would remember that we used to be idolaters. Our forefathers used to worship idolatry in this place. Va'anu le'ya inenu, but us, our eyes, are to God. That's all?
So the priests and the Levites are at the back of the procession instead of the front, right?
At this point, they're at the back.
Yes.
Of course, they have to cut through the crowd.
So the crowd kind of opens for them.
I don't know, but
such
I guess.
Such obedient people.
So these people have no time to be in their sukkah.
That's a very good point.
Good question.
But it does say that they ate and they drank. So they're in the sukkah for that.
And they napped in there.
They napped in the sukkah.
Yeah.
And also remember, most of these people were pilgrims.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't have their own homes. They were guests.
Yeah.
And we actually read about a year ago about how they used to build sukkot hanging out of the windows.
Right.
So everyone. Yeah. Gemar chatima tova.
Chatima tova. Tada rabba.
Okay.